Welcome to episode 90 of Count Me In, IMA's podcast about all things affecting the accounting and finance world. I'm your host, Mitch Roshong, and I'm here to introduce you to our featured guest speaker for today's conversation, Andy Kettlewell. Andy is the Vice President of Inventory and Analytics for Walgreens after serving many years prior in various supply chain and inventory management roles with the company. He spoke to my co-host, Adam, about all the disruption across business and how he has managed to handle the volatility in the marketplace. Andy addresses the impact of supply and demand, budgeting for these unexpected factors, and how technology has enabled him to make better business decisions. Keep listening as we head over to their conversation now.
Andy, COVID-19 has been disruptive across all aspects of business. How have you handled the demand volatility in the marketplace, and then in turn, its impact on operations?
Yeah, Adam, I think it's a very poignant question for where we are in a post-COVID-19 economy. So we've seen dramatic changes in not only the magnitude of demand changes and demand volatility, but also the frequency and the pace of those changes. And to make that real and what we've all experienced in our lives, it's everything from the run on toilet paper, and you've probably experienced those shortages firsthand, and how the news media kind of helped to extrapolate and share that story widely, thus creating a run in a panic situation, to other commodity items like hand sanitizer and masks and other items that were needed for a shift in consumer behavior, right? With COVID-19 that the marketplace has had to respond to. But what we're also seeing is a shift in everyday items. So with the traffic patterns and how this has impacted all of our lives. So likely you're not going to your office right now. So that means you're not passing the convenient Duane Reade in Manhattan or your Walgreens, across from your office in downtown Chicago. And that's changed our consumer behavior away from maybe those instant consumption items to more of those take-home items, right? That as we shift our behavior. There's been a couple of other interesting transformations here across all aspects of the business. So Satya Nadella, the CEO of Microsoft, in their last earnings call, likened the digital transformation of 2 years of digital transformation that happened in 2 months. McKinsey and Company's research has shown that we've seen 10 years worth of growth in e-commerce penetration in only 3 months. And so e-commerce penetration is now north of 30% across all of retail. These are dramatic shifts in consumer behavior that our organization at Walgreens and every retailer is having to accommodate to. So in the reaction and the operationalization of that, right, first and foremost, every firm is having to keep their team members safe. And so when within a global supply chain, right, that means new protocols, new efficiency measures, but everything from how we keep our distribution center team members safe to our truck drivers to our store team members to keep operations moving was point number one. And that means everything from personal protective equipment to new policies, procedures, different shifts in labor management to help keep our employees safe to then keep the product moving. And then from there, very tactical impacts within our supply chain that we've had to address, including we've redesigned all of our demand forecasting and replenishment algorithms. Now, what that means is, right, all those consumer behaviors, the systems that go behind that use artificial intelligence and machine learning to identify what you're going to buy in Walgreens tomorrow have to be much more dynamic. I liken this to for most firms, like a sand mandala, if you're familiar with that term, the Tibetan Buddhist monks, spend hours and days, building the perfect sand mandala, and then they have to wipe it away and then start fresh. That's exactly what most firms are doing with their forecast models across their entire end-to-end supply chain to become more adaptive and responsive to consumer demand. And then sourcing, right? At the heart of COVID-19, we found areas within the end-to-end supply chain that were very efficient, but didn't have many redundant sources. And what I mean by that, right, is that think about that toilet paper example, right? A very efficient supply chain. The factories run 24/7 to spit out the exact right amount of product that matches demand usage for commercial toilet paper and consumer toilet paper. With everybody not going to their offices or to sports stadiums anymore, the demand for consumer product goes up, but that's manufactured on different machines. And it requires, you know, sourcing new partners and the capabilities to build that new product. And then lastly, on the business response to the demand volatility is around long-term planning, right? A lot of what we do to figure out what consumers will buy and need is really sociology at the end of the day, right? And we have to predict how consumers are going to behave in the future. And so that means long-term planning, right? In March, we were trying to figure out, gosh, are public pools going to be open? And are we going to sell many swim toys at Walgreens to our consumers? To trying to predict whether or not trick-or-treat is going to happen right now, coming up with the Halloween season. Walgreens is the number two candy retailer in the United States. And whether or not trick or treat happens is a very big deal that has massive balance sheet and cash flow impacts if those sales don't happen as they normally would, that we have to work through and plan. And to do that, we're trying to tap into new and novel data sources to, try to predict what the next big thing is going to be for consumers or how our consumers' behavior will change versus, the past precedent that's been set over the number of years.
So you've talked a lot about how, consumers are effective in your operations. And one of the examples you mentioned was like the great toilet paper shortage that happened when the pandemic started. Can we talk a little bit more about the volatility of the supply impact, especially on the balance sheet? Because, you need that supply to be able to sell the products to consumers.
Yeah, absolutely. I would suggest that what we've seen through COVID-19 is the most volatile and widespread supply disruption that most supply chains have seen in the last several decades. And the difference here is most supply chains are built to withstand normal levels of volatility. And this is everything from, gosh, the semi had a flat tire, right? And arrived a day or two late to, if we're doing manufacturing operations in areas that are prone to getting hurricanes, right? In the Caribbean, or in Florida or in Texas, we're prepared to have redundancy in manufacturing or planning to be able to shift assets around in the supply chain to accommodate those very short-term disruptive events. And what's different about COVID-19 versus many of those short-term disruptive events like hurricanes, typhoons, earthquakes, even the volcano explosions that happen to release ash into the atmosphere, is that they're usually very localized and they're very limited in duration of immediate impact, sometimes longer-term impact when destruction happens. With this pandemic impacting the entire globe, it's been very different. And it's across our manufacturers, they've really had to adapt to manage through this impact. And so it's everything from reduced manufacturing throughput because of absenteeism, because there's a greater part of the population that's sick or has to quarantine, and how do you deal with that, to having to realize that I have lower throughput, so how do I prioritize my manufacturing? And you see this on store shelves today with you might not have every scent or flavor of a product. You can have any flavor of Clorox wipe that you want right now, as long as it's lemon scented, because to increase manufacturing throughput, we rationalize down the SKUs that can be produced. But also we're seeing natural logistical challenges. It takes human beings to move product through boats, airplanes, trucks, and that does create constraints within logistical networks. But also on the financial side, right? All of these constraints that COVID has cause greater investments in operational spending, right? It costs more money to provide your employees personal protective equipment. It costs more money to run overtime in your factories, right? Because you might be able to have fewer folks, shoulder to shoulder in your factories safely. And with that increased operational spending, right, it's putting some compression on margins across many firms. And for many suppliers that are smaller in nature, it does provide some liquidity challenges that they're going to have to navigate through from a capital investment standpoint. The other bit that's impacting supply that I don't want to be dismissive of is external factors, especially governmental factors, right? So we saw at the heart of the pandemic, the government's shutting down non-essential workplaces. And that does impact parts of the supply chain that at points manufacture components that go into other products, right? Or what are deemed non-essential supplies during that period. There were, for example, in our business, cosmetic suppliers who had to shut down manufacturing for several weeks, deemed non-essential. And that puts another strain on the overall economy, but also puts some shortages on some raw materials as it relates to, you know, pharmaceutical ingredients globally. Additionally, we saw a bit more nationalization and governmental protectionist policies that happened. So for example, China and a number of other, you know, Southeast Asian countries look to protect their own workforce and their own citizens first, and put some restrictions on exports of personal protective equipment or pharmaceutical ingredients at the height of the pandemic to take care of their citizens and their economy ahead of the export channels. And so this global connectivity around the entire supply chain flowing through with these external dynamic factors are really making it a challenge on supply across many, many commodities and markets to keep up with, and putting strains on and requiring new investments. And, you know, lastly, you know, in my role, right, in helping to lead inventory management for a very large retailer, right, that means we have to make different investments in inventory and stock holdings because of that dynamic nature, which, if done thoughtfully, might not have an impact on the balance sheet, but in the short term will, right? You know, we've provided guidance that there will be an inventory increase as we increase our stock holdings to maintain continuity of supply for our customers and our patients so that we can ensure we have that supply, knowing that there's more volatility happening in the supply base right now. And being realistic that in some cases, we're going to have to spend a little bit more money to be able to accelerate how we get those goods to market. Might be more air freight versus, you know, ocean carrier shipments, which is at a significant premium to make sure that we can drive that product availability. So it's going to affect both that operational cost, that OPEX spend, and as well as the inventory on the balance sheet as we migrate through this. But as the market settles down, right, as the new ways of working continue to, you know, cement themselves into the supply base, and as those longer term capital investments in the factories and the machinery come on to bring more capacity, you'll see a waning in this come through. But it could take several years when you think about, you know, building more capacity into certain parts of the global supply chain.
Definitely. So you've mentioned a lot of different factors, and I can only think about the accounting and finance team as probably having a crazy field day just trying to work on a budget and trying to take all these factors into account. How have you worked with that team to kind of create a budget to take into account all these different things?
Yeah, I would say the importance of the forecast versus the budget becomes very important in this. Our partnership with our internal finance and accounting teams is critical to make sure that we're putting the jet fuel into the company, right? When you think about a retailer, I can only sell the inventory I have, right? And so we have to make very thoughtful inventory investments that meet that dynamic consumer demand that we had talked about. And so we need to not only free up the working capital of the less productive inventory or the items that our consumers aren't buying, so that we can invest into the items that we expect our consumers to really need. And so we've actually moved to a more granular budgeting and forecasting process as a result, right, to capture those nuances of where we think we're going to have to make spot investments. And that's really helped us to help tell the story, you know, as I meet with our CFO and all of our finance partners for the division to help folks understand where the thoughtful investments are, how long we expect to sustain those investments, and the drivers that are those risk factors that I mentioned in the supply base or the demand volatility are causing us to make those investments. And so, you know, we're more frequently forecasting our inventory and receipt flows, as well as our demand. So moving from monthly processes to weekly, moving from high level categories. So an example of paper goods versus toilet paper and you know, facial tissue and paper towels, and really breaking that down to a very finite granular levels and even regionally has been critical for us, so that we can track, you know, where we're winning on those investments and those bets that we're making with inventory, and where we're losing as well. And we need to take quicker action to, you know, exit out of some of those businesses and reinvest into where we expect the demand to go, so that the inventory investments don't just kind of run out of control on us. And so it's been a very good partnership with our finance partners, but it's required us to revisit those processes. It's also required our finance and accounting team members to get closer to the business drivers. And I would say that's the advice that I would put out to, you know, all of our, you know, management, accounting, and finance professionals out there is really embed yourself with your business partners to learn about the risk factors, right? Those external factors that are impacting the business decisions, like I talked about in supply and demand volatility. Is going to help you understand, you know, those forecasting biases or the range of accuracy that you know we may or may not have in such a dynamic environment, and your business partners would have in this kind of environment.
So to kind of round out our conversation, you know, you've mentioned a couple of times the different technologies you use, and I'm sure that AI and RPA have come into play to help make better decisions in your supply chain. So how has the digitalization of the supply chain helped you as a retailer, but also flown down to your consumers as well?
Yeah, it's we couldn't have responded to COVID-19 without the digitalization of our supply chain. It's critical. What we do at Walgreens is on the non-pharmaceutical, so the non-prescription side of the business, is we have to forecast and replenish 200 million item store combinations every day and try to predict that demand there. And we do that as a central function. And to be able to process through that much data and ingest what are the data around what our consumers are telling us they need and want and don't need and don't want at any given time is critical. You know, we've invested heavily in tools like RPA to, you know, automate more of the repetitive tasks to operate the machine. You know, I liken the supply chain machine that most firms are using, like one of those great Rube Goldberg devices, right? Where we've got the bird that, you know, knocks over the glass and moves the marble down. You know, we can automate a lot of those tasks so that we can free up our human capital into tuning that machine and making it as agile and responsive as possible. And the RPA has been a great investment there. But where we see a lot of growth is in the machine learning and the artificial intelligence space, right? You know, gone are the days where you might increase a forecast for a category by 30% and let it disaggregate to every store or for every item in that category. Our consumers don't shop that way, you know, and we don't supply that way. And so we need to ensure that we're micro-tuning every node in the supply chain to be as responsive as possible. So if we see a trend that, you know, a certain category, let's say hand sanitizer, is spiking in a college town, right, because that college town went back to school, and then 2 weeks later that the campus decided to go to full e-learning, we need to be able to capture that in real time and from disparate external data sources, news feeds, social media, to be able to influence those micro forecasts that thus drive all of the orders and all of that inventory flow and the millions and billions of dollars of inventory that's flowing through these supply chains, so that that's responsive to how quickly the market can move, especially during a pandemic, but also through the growth in the digital and the e-commerce economy, because we see a lot of shifting happening there, so that we can utilize that customer data to put the best offer in front of our customer and ensure we have the availability and can meet those needs as they change.
Well, Andy, I really appreciate you sharing your insight and expertise with us on the podcast. I know that our audience is going to really enjoy this conversation.
Thanks, Adam, and thanks for the time today. Really appreciate sharing our story and helping to share about how supply chain impacts everything through the management, accounting, finance space, because we're at the end of the day, we're all one team growing our business and our firm's value and how we deliver that. So happy to share that story.
This has been Count Me In, IMA's podcast, providing you with the latest perspectives of thought leaders from the accounting and finance profession. If you like what you heard and you'd like to be counted in for more relevant accounting and finance education, visit IMA's website at www.imanet.org.